production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
The future of the Achievement School District, City Council runoffs, and much more tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined this week by a roundtable of journalists talking about some of the biggest stories going on right now. Ryan Poe from the Commercial Appeal, thanks for being here again.
Good to be here, thank you.
Karanja Janaku, editor of the new Tri-State Defender, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Along with Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. Let's start with the Achievement School District, which, for those who've forgotten, the Achievement School District was born around the time of consolidation and deconsolidation and all the changes in the school district. It was, I think, Governor Haslam, when he came in, that introduced that and a whole lot of other changes and reforms in public education. The Achievement School District controls 30 schools in the Memphis area, give or take. They are lower performing schools, and that was part of what the district was set up to take over lower performing schools. And so maybe I'll start with you, Bill. It's at a pivotal moment in a couple good ways and a lot of sort of maybe arguably bad ways.
Mm-hmm. There are three Memphis schools that were taken over, in effect, by the state-run Achievement School District here in Memphis. And those schools look like they are about to come off of that list. In other words, the student achievement scores and monitoring at those three schools has indicated that those schools are no longer part of the bottom 5% of schools in the state in terms of student achievement. So this is the first time that this has really happened, where it's been contemplated that a school taken over by the ASD would return to the conventional school system, Shelby County Schools in this case. It raises a lot of questions about whether there are still steps that Shelby County Schools would have to take if it takes those schools back, whether the parents could mount some kind of petition drive to keep the charters that run those schools in place. So that still has to be worked out. All of that happens against the backdrop of a new administration, a new governor in Nashville, Bill Lee, and his education secretary, Penny Schwinn, who was already taking a pretty critical and far-reaching examination into the turnaround school model, specifically the Achievement School District, and how it works, and whether it should be changed yet again.
Yeah. Crunch, I mean, of those 30 schools that they've taken over, three coming out after 8 years, it's a 10%, I mean, arguably it's a 10% success rate. So that has, I think, raised some red flags for people. And it seems it raised some questions, certainly for the new governor and his education secretary. There was also a study that showed there were really minimal or no gains in the schools the ASD has taken over. And it has been, the critics of the ASD have talked about how it's just been so disruptive for parents, for schools, and the families and kids who are in those schools. Your thoughts on where we are with the ASD?
Well, you're right that we're 7 or 8 years into it. My thoughts really go to Mark White from Germantown, the Republican legislator from Germantown. He's the head of the House Education Committee. And I saw the other day where he said, hey, look, we're 8 years into this thing and we're still struggling like it's day one. The other thing that caught me that he said was, hey, look, yeah, I'm for the state stepping in and putting in some stronger accountability measures relative to the charter schools, right? But he wants to, first of all, see what happens from these listening tours that are going on. I think we talked earlier, mm-hmm. There's a couple of them coming up, one in Fraser and one at, I think it's Wooddale High School. And the state will go through that process of getting information, then they'll talk to the local school districts. But as I understand it right now, if those three schools come off, if they stay on course and they come off, the state is saying that, hey, they would have to submit a charter request to the local school districts, and then the local schools approve or not, but what if they don't? And so that's part of the questioning, is what are the steps?
And just to clarify, because there's so many acronyms and so many bodies here, the ASD, the Achievement School District, is run by the state.
By the state.
It hired charter school operators to run these three schools, three different charter operators, I think, if I'm correct about that.
Right.
And again, there isn't a clear path that the Shelby County schools, as these schools come out of the Achievement School District, go to Shelby County, that they don't have to approve. The county, Shelby County School Board, doesn't have to approve those charter operators. There's some question why they wouldn't if they've shown some success. I mean, wouldn't you think it would, from an outside perspective, it would seem that they would be apt to accept those charter operators, but maybe not.
And in some cases, to even further complicate it, the Shelby County school system took the step of saying, okay, the ASD has taken over this school. As far as our school system is concerned, that school is closed.
Yeah.
So then you have the whole question of, okay, if the ASD is out, if the charter organization is out, does that school exist anymore?
Yeah, because I think originally the local schools were thinking that if the improved schools, if they do improve, then they would come back in, but not necessarily as charter schools under the traditional model. And so I think what White is saying is that there's been some evolution away from that thought to maybe where they could come in as charter schools, but the city would run the charters as opposed to the state.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Shelby County School Board, mm-hmm. The city.
And
getting another entity. And
at the outset of this, we had Chris Barbic, who was the first superintendent of the ASD,
yep.
on this program several times as the ASD launched. And he had talked about this as basically a tenure process for these schools, in which the parents would petition the school system to continue with that charter organization at some point if parents felt like it was merited.
They've had three leadership changes during that period, the latest of which was last summer, and that hasn't helped, particularly with holding some of the charter schools, charter operations accountable.
Yeah, there is no superintendent right now for the mm-hmm. ASD. So I don't know if your thoughts on this, Ryan. Have you been involved? Comments?
Yeah, I haven't been following it as closely as these two guys have, but I will say that I do think that the results that you mentioned, ASDs have not shown significant improvement. I think that shows that sticking a new management sign on local schools does not solve all of their problems. And I think that what we're going to see now is, I do think the parents, I do think that control should belong locally to Shelby County Schools. And I hope that it's going to work out, that those schools can go back under Shelby County. We'll see. I do think the state is going to be moving away from this model. And so I think that's where it's going to go eventually.
One thing they raised, and I remember Chris Barbic years ago talking about it, and we had Chris Barbic on with Dorsey Hobson when Dorsey Hobson had taken over as superintendent of the school system, they talked about it being basically a stick, a threat. The ASD was a threat. If you don't get your school in order, we, the state, will take over via this mechanism. And I think I'm going to paraphrase Chris Barbic saying, we'd rather not take them over, and we just want to keep the pressure on the school system. And Dorsey Hobson was, at least in that interview, was sitting next to Chris Barbic, was like, yeah, they keep pressure on us. We don't want them to have schools. It's nothing personal. It keeps pressure on us to do more. And the innovation zone schools, which have shown some real progress in terms of education levels, were an outcome of that, that was their competition or their alternative to ASDs.
But the ASD started in the 2012 school year, a year before the schools merger, 2012 to 2013. The question now is that almost 8 years into that, if the ASD is still the incentive for conventional schools to do better, but the ASD schools aren't doing better, I think 8 years on, that argument really has some hair on it.
We'll see where that goes. I want to move on as we've come off the election. We've got city council runoffs coming up. We'll talk about those in a minute. But let's focus for a second on the sales tax referendum. And already we're starting to see the county commission moving, that they may try to take half of this, give or take $50 million that's been raised. Your thoughts on where we are, Bill, as some weeks from the election, and what comes next? Because this sales tax referendum, there's a lot of unanswered questions in what Commissioner Edmund Ford calls the aspirational language that was approved.
We're several weeks away from the passage of the referendum, and it becomes increasingly clear that we really don't know what we approved. We know what the aspiration was. The aspiration was to restore the benefits to police and firefighters that were cut by the city in 2014. But how to carry that out, how much money will really be raised, and then this whole part about the county has the right to come in and say, but we want to have some measure of that, possibly half of it. All of that is still the subject of many legal opinions that the county commission has sought. And a reminder here that the county commission includes commissioners who represent areas within the city of Memphis, even though this is a city sales tax hike that's in effect here. So a lot of legal opinions, probably a vote in the not too distant future on actually taking this to a referendum that one of the legal opinions says would be among voters in the unincorporated county, but again, more legal opinions to come.
And that is because the theory there is that the city dwellers have already, city of Memphis has already voted, the municipalities in the county voted years ago to increase their sales tax from 9.25 to 9.75, largely to fund their independent school districts. So Ryan, I don't know if you noticed, Kemp Conrad, who was a vocal opponent to the sales tax referendum, came on the show, a very heated show with the Tommy Malone, the head of the firefighters union, and made the case that this shouldn't happen, that this puts us on towards a bad fiscal, the city on a bad fiscal path. It was interesting in his chairman's recap, as the city council chairman's recap, he talked about the elections and he noted that the referendum had passed. But you could almost see, and maybe I'm interpreting too much, but you could almost see a reframing of what it was. What he tried to frame it as was the voters want improved police and fire resources. They want to rebuild the police force. And he seemed to almost be making the case of, well, the intent of that vote, don't worry about the specifics of going back to the 2014 benefit levels. Just use the money to fight crime.
Yeah, I do think it was a reframing of the issue. And I think that what he said has merit. I think people do care very much about crime in Memphis. And that is what they were voting for. They were voting to put more money toward fighting crime, supporting the police and fire. But at the same time, I do think that what Kemp said shows that there is a significant contingent in city government that wants to use that money in a more general way.
Yeah.
And I think there's not a lot stopping them. State law doesn't require them to use that money for the language that was on the referendum.
They can use it for anything.
They can use it for anything. And if Shelby County takes part of that, then, you know, we may not have enough to do what all the referendum said anyway. And if there's another recession, you know, that's even less revenue that we have to spend. So what could happen is you might not have enough money to do what the referendum said anyway.
I don't know your thoughts on that, Karunja. do you think there are enough votes on city council and people in government, Mayor Strickland? I mean, we're early in this, but just speculating for a second, that they might say, well, we're going to interpret that referendum as a put this money towards public safety versus put it toward the exact letter of the benefit structure that was taken away, 6 years ago?
Well, I think part of it may be when they take it up. I mean, we just had the elections. These guys that are in there now are sort of like lame duck until the beginning of the year. So is this council, as constituted, are they going to take it up, or are they going to wait and just sort of defer it until the next group comes in? I think that's one of the issues.
Let's shift to that as we have two runoff races coming up, Bill, in November.
November 14th, early voting will start later this month. It'll be here before you know it.
And who are those? Let's go through, for people who aren't as close to this as we are, those races are who
sure.
And where?
District 1, it is a contest between Rhonda Logan and Sherman Greer. Sherman Greer was appointed to the seat by the city council this past January. District 7 is
District
the...
District 1 is roughly...
District 1 is
area?
Fraser, Raleigh, and Cordova.
Got it. Okay.
District 7 is a runoff between Berlin Boyd, the incumbent, and Michael and Easter Thomas. They were the top two vote getters. And in each of these contests, no one got 50% plus one, the reason for the runoff.
Here. And Berlin Boyd now represents the parts of downtown and North Memphis.
This district is actually some parts of Frazier, downtown, okay. North Memphis. That's the basic area, Mud Island as well.
Thoughts on this, on these races for the people there? These are important seats, and these seats can be decided by small number of votes.
They are, and I think in District 7 and District 1, I think what you have there, the incumbents, Greer and Boyd, kind of represent the institutional faction, the faction of the council that generally votes to support Memphis institutions. They vote for the zoo, you know, for whatever. And on the other side, you have the more progressive, the group that wants to use city money more specifically for the individual people. And so I think there's this battle going on right now for city council between those two groups. And I think that, who wins that will largely decide what kind of council we have going forward in the next 4 years.
Thoughts on these races?
Well, my first thought is turnout. I mean, I think we're 26.5% for the election itself. And then usually when you go to these runoffs, it drops dramatically. I mean, down to the 5% level. And so I think that, for the candidates that are not incumbents, their first issue is just letting people know that there is an election and what you go from there. In the Boyd race, I think he polled like 30% of the vote, and so that's like 70% of the other people decided that, hey, they like somebody else. But incumbents, though, generally do better in those runoff races because of the mechanisms and things that they have.
Go ahead.
In the October elections, seven council incumbents were reelected. The other three incumbents, you had Jerry Curry, who lost her bid for a super district seat. These are the other two seats that are held by incumbents on the council. So depending on what happens here, you could have a 7-6 balance on the council, seven returning members, six new members, or you could have nine returning members and four new members.
Yeah. I have the voice of Steve Mulroy in my head. Steve Mulroy, who has been an advocate for instant runoff voting and all that goes into that. I don't know if I can ask this question correctly. Had instant runoff voting been in place, who would have won those districts? Has anybody done that math? Right? I mean, because the argument was, yeah, you don't go to a second vote. You take the results.
You don't go to a runoff. You just indicate your second and third.
Yeah. Oh, so we don't know because they weren't on the ballot. It was not just it wasn't just. So we don't know.
I mean, it's guesswork because the person who finishes second in the initial vote could wind up finishing first, but the person who finishes fourth could wind up finishing first in it.
Okay. You had an interesting thought. We didn't have you on the show, Ryan. We couldn't work it out on the show we did right after election night. But you had thoughts on a quote from a column you did about the J.B. Smiling was one of the people who didn't get the endorsement of the People's Convention but ran as a progressive, and the role of the People's Convention and progressives right now locally and how that played out. Your thoughts on that? It was an interesting column.
Yeah, I do think that this election really showed that what Memphians want is someone who believes in Memphis. I think that a lot of the campaign, and y'all feel free to disagree with me, but a lot of the campaign was about Memphis is going the wrong direction. And I think that Memphians really gravitate toward a message of, we have problems, but we also like Memphis. And so I do think that J.B. Smiley kind of struck that chord there. He still had the progressive message. A lot of the progressives who ran, who were endorsed by the People's Convention, lost. But he had the right message, and he had that progressive mindset that showed kind of a way that progressives in the future, I think, can move forward. I think in that way, he was similar to Mayor Strickland, who had that Memphis has momentum message. I think that's kind of the message.
Once heard him say that on this show or in an interview.
It wasn't his official slogan, but yes, I believe he has said it before, and that was, kind of what got associated with his campaign.
Thoughts on that? where the progressive movement is, and we talked about it that day after the election.
Right, Memphis is not a progressive city. Yeah. Let's start there. It's moderate at best. And so I think that, I just think generally, whether you're moderate or progressive or conservative or whatever, we just need to be more educated generally about the process of elections and government and things of that sort. I think that the whole process of the referendum is really a good case study for the whole government process, both from particular entities like the police association, the fire association, but also the general populace. I mean, we're talking about a move that the city made because it was getting heat from the state relative to the unfunded the pension
liability.
So then they make a move, then they cut benefits, and then the police and the fire come in. They move to get it restored. They go to the referendum route. Then we vote on the referendum. And now we're talking about, okay, what do we really vote on, and possibly going into court for that. That's a case study for sure.
Thoughts?
I think that the People's Convention was not a gathering that was meant to be representative of the city as a whole. I think it was a gathering of people who were part of the new activism of the last 4 to 5 years. And
going back to the bridge and the Black Lives
Matter. Going back to the bridge protest a little bit before that. So I think that this election was a first step. I think that progressive forces under the banner of the new activism did not succeed in turning out their voters.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened on election day. I think that Memphis voters, the 26.5% who turned out, we're saying that we think Strickland is on the right path. But there was an important caveat in it, and we even heard it from the mayor himself during the campaign, that he said, I realize there are other problems, that our economic development is right now happening in the places that are the usual suspects, downtown and midtown, but that it needs to grow beyond those areas, break out of those areas, which was something that A.C. Wharton was saying when he was mayor 4 years ago. I think what you still have, particularly with regard to the economic development issue, is a lot of people who are highly suspicious because they're saying we've seen this before, and these areas continue to get right. left out. So I think there are some warnings in the statement the voters made.
Right. It is interesting this week that there was recently that the Uptown TIF was approved, you know, to bring some more tax incentives to the Uptown area. And you know, the Firestone plant suddenly is in play, potentially the old Firestone plant. But speaking of business economic development, Melvin Burgess, tax assessor, held a forum this recently about these very issues. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it starts with you know, the point that he was making, that in Orange Mound, I think property values have reduced by as much as 30% over a 10-year period. And so what do we do about it? So an economic development summit was the initial response. It was a huge turnout over there, too, just hundreds of people. You had entrepreneurs, investors, community people. And so then out of that came a decision to have a task force to focus on Orange Mound, to come up with a comprehensive plan, and whatever they come up with, to make sure that they avoid gentrification. I thought that Burgess made an important point, and he was saying that, hey, whatever we do going forward, we need to make sure that we keep inclusion in mind, and we need to be able to handle difficult conversations. Okay.
Define gentrification, because you get different, one gets different definitions of it.
Yeah, I think the one that the people I know mostly reach for is, you have an area, say like in North Memphis or around Crosstown, you know, back over there in Klondike and places like that, and then the development comes in, and those houses or people come in, buy up houses, buy businesses, and the people in the neighborhood then are moved out.
Okay. And often that means that African Americans are moved out, mm-hmm. and it is more white people moving in. I mean, that is the history of gentrification that you're referencing.
Right. Yeah.
Another thought with just a minute and a half left. You did a story, and somehow this relates in some way, about a natural hair discrimination ordinance or law that was passed in Cincinnati, and you made a case for in your column recently. Memphis doing the same.
I did. So what's going on now, California and New York are two states who have passed laws that have banned discrimination against people based on their natural hair. So in other words, an employer cannot tell a worker, you have to straighten your hair that is naturally curly, or you have to cut off your dreadlocks. That's another case that we've seen recently. So in Cincinnati, they were the second city to have done it after New York City, and I was recommending that Memphis be the third. I think that Memphis could make a big statement to the world, to the nation, that this is the kind of discrimination that tells people that they should not be who they are or express themselves how they naturally would. And I think that as a city, I think that's something we need to stand up against.
All right, we will leave it there. I will preview that the newly reelected mayor, Jim Strickland, will be on the show, I believe, on November 1st. Lee Harris will be on the show sometime in November. I don't have the date in front of me, but he will be on. Watch your listings to talk about all kinds of things going on, probably the sales tax referendum, but certainly the funding and expanded funding of MATA that he is after. That is all we have this week. Join us again next week. Good night.